Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 8, Episode 12, titled The Key. What'd you think of this episode?
Man, this episode was all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. It's more stuff that doesn't quite make sense to me, and I'm not really sure what's going on. Like, Negan is, like, every fucking passable week is less and less cool and seems less and less in control, and I'm more on Team Simon. And Rick just fucking loses his mind and does some batshit crazy things. Like, I don't know. Like, if Rick just radios the Hilltop, hey, I've got Negan, I'm going to go try to cut him off, like, maybe the war's over this episode. Because all the Hilltop comes rolling down. They get the saviors with their pants down. No one, I don't think, is in charge of this plot anymore.
That's one of the big problems that really crystallized itself in my mind this week is how there isn't really a leader anymore. Because Rick is supposed to be the leader, and Rick will come in and he'll create a strategic, tactical plan, and then somebody will break it up. In this episode, he's breaking it up himself. Right. Like, he's not even following his own damn plans.
Right.
And then you got Maggie on the Hilltop, who I view as, like, the true leader, but she is still clinging to this idea that Rick is the actual leader.
But still, like, no, like, Michonne doesn't kind of see it that way. I mean, no one really sees Rick as the leader. And
there's nobody sitting back and setting strategy. Like, tactics are involved, but strategy is not.
Are we going to see Jesus this season?
I don't know, man. They might just, you know what, we got one too many cast members. Yeah. We don't want to pay him.
Yeah.
Bring him back for 9.
Right. Just put Jesus in cold. He'll just scavenge this whole season.
Yeah.
And it's you're right, because the other leader would be Maggie, but as we've discussed, Maggie coming back in of any kind of expanded capacity in The Walking Dead is dubious, because the actor herself is probably not going to come back for full-time anyway, because she's already got a full-time job. Assuming, like you said, the pilot gets picked up. I don't know, man. That's what I'm saying. Like, this stuff just feels like written by committee, and this was another Greg Nicotero episode, which I was cringing because I don't think he's a very good director, like any kind of long form director. I think his action shots are super confusing, and there's a lot of action shots in here, and there's just a bunch of, you know, like our. Our big picadillo with him is his, like, day night transitions, because like, there's two different episodes. He's like, you know, tell me what time of day it is. And there's several shots here where, like, are they rolling out at dawn? Are they rolling out at sunset? Who the fuck knows? Probably dawn, but it's a mess of an episode.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess the reason that I agree it's all over the place is because, yes, it was kind of messy, but also there are a couple of nuggets in there that I really thought, I don't know if they accidentally hit on these points, and it just happened to come together in a way that I thought was interesting and could have been good writing. But there's a couple of small nuggets in there that I'll talk about.
Right. I'm curious to see which nugget you think. Because to me, the Simon Dwight stuff is the only thing I thought was believable or interesting. And it would have been much more believable and interesting had, you know, everything else been working. Because to me, the way they are framing this, there's really no reason for any smart, powerful person to support Negan at this point.
Sure.
Like, he is, Negan is, in this iteration of The Walking Dead, just seems like a bullshitter. Who has been called on his bullshit. So, and we know Simon's good at that. Simon, if he can do one thing, he can call bullshit. Very loud and punctuatedly.
Yeah. So why don't we get into the recap?
Before we get to the episode, I want to talk a little bit about housekeeping. We just inked the deal last week. We'll be returning to Con of Thrones this year. Con of Thrones will not be returning to Nashville, Tennessee. They've moved to Dallas, Texas. It's going to be May 25th through 27th, 2018. That's this year. Don't know why I had to clarify that. Probably should have left it out of the promo. But tickets are available. Jim and I will be there doing a bunch of panels. There's also got a lot of guests that they've already announced, and they're adding people daily. So far, I saw that they had the actors playing Gilly and Shay and Cyril Farrell and Roz. Cyril Farrell.
Cyril's back. All
yeah,
right.
Miltos was a lot of fun last year. Yeah. And like I said, they're adding more to the lineup every week. A lot of your favorite podcasters and Game of Thrones personalities are going to be there. There's going to be tons of cosplay opportunities. Looks like it's going to be a really good time, even bigger and better than last year. So if you're at all interested in Game of Thrones, or you just want to meet Jim and I, we will be in Dallas once again, May 25th through the 27th. And you can go to conofthrones.net to check out additional details and to purchase your tickets. As far as baldmove.com, we are going to be dropping tomorrow a commissioned podcast on the 2014 horror film It Follows, which Jim declared his favorite horror movie in a long time. The best horror movie in a long time.
I'll stand behind it, too.
That's quite the recommendation from such a horror buff such as himself. We'll also be seeing this Thursday a preview of Isle of Dogs, the new Wes Anderson stop-motion film, which looks like it's going to be a lot of fun for bald movies. And then something else Jim and I have been doing is we're on Twitch, twitch.tv/baldmove. We are streaming different video and video game content Mondays and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern for a couple hours, and then we've been streaming here and there. But tomorrow, Tuesday the 20th, we will be streaming, starting at around 9 o'clock in the morning, Sea of Thieves, the just-released piratical video game. We're going to see if we can take over the high seas, Bald Moose style.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played the game. I watched it's being streamed a little bit. I don't know. Can I load you into a cannon and fire you?
I hope so.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. That's my, if I can just shoot you out of a cannon, my life will be complete. Check that out at twitch.tv/baldmove. We've actually been doing this for a couple weeks and haven't really told anybody. We've got a complete playthrough of Star Control 2, the classic 1992 video game. We played a couple hours of, Into the Breach, the new turn-based strategy game. It's kind of like Pacific Rim. That was a lot of fun, and we got lots of plans going forward. Twitch.tv/baldmove. Check all that stuff out, baldmove.com. Yeah, so we do this Nicotero thing where we get extreme close-ups on everybody's face with some kind of crazy fisheye lens where Negan's grinning like a fucking idiot, Simon is scowling, and Dwight just rubs his head all confused. It's all an extreme close-up. It's all in slow-mo.
Yeah, the faces. The more faces. They more really face- just love these things,
yeah,
man.
It really, really builds the tension.
Silent faces.
Really builds the tension. Negan goes to visit Dwight, who's been confined to his room, and brings him beer. Negan has the intelligence to suspect Dwight of foul play because, you know, Dwight has been doing foul play, but Dwight looks so nervous and so guilty and so hangdog. And
but
this,
it's like Eugene in every scene he's in, right? Like,
but that's Eugene. Like Dwight, I've seen Dwight act differently, and so has Negan. And Negan gives him that kind of like, you know, like dad look, and then it's like, I can't stay mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, come on, we got to go fuck up the hilltop. And he leads his flock in sullying their blades and arrows in zombie gore. But then it's I don't understand the plan because, like, to me, they should have shown them dipping bullets in gore.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Because he's like, now don't just clip. Like, what are you going to do? Like, wound people in the legs and go and scratch them with your hatchet and run off going, tee-hee, tee-hee.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, arrows and spears, sure. I buy. That'd be awesome. But mm-hmm. I thought maybe I did miss it. There's a couple points last night where I remember thinking, I feel like I missed a scene because we got talking or wasn't paying attention or whatever. And it turns out, no, some of this stuff is just doesn't seem like it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's very like, oh, when you shoot, just shoot to maim. We want them to turn. But
yeah.
Again, you didn't show your...
The logistics of that don't work out.
Yeah. Like, the hilltop has guns.
Yeah.
And they have a fortified position.
And every incentive to kill you.
And you've got arrows, fine. You got a couple arrows. But the majority of what we saw is knives and hatchets and mm-hmm. Lucille. Like, what the fuck are you going to do? You're going to lose so many guys getting your one or two licks in.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Also, I seriously doubt these people have the ability to handle biohazardous materials with any competence. Like,
right.
They're going to end up taking out more of their own people
right.
with this gut sludge than taking out Alexandrians.
Right. So Negan's firm of the opinion that once Hilltop gets a load of what they're cooking, they'll bend the knee, and Simon still not on board. Dwight's going to go ride off on his bike to scout ahead, but Simon says, hey, hold up, I need you to ride with me because I'm going to try to convert you. I'm going to try to convert you to the Church of Simon. Negan brings up the rear. He's like in the opposite of the Vanguard position. He's in the Dodge Charger guard of the position. And he's got a bucket of zombie guts in riding shotgun. And he just that's where he soaks Lucille. Because
clearly not expecting to get into a car wreck.
No, or hit a bump, or hit a bump in these poorly maintained post-apocalyptic roads. Because like, where are the potholes in this road? Like, you've had several years of winter in Virginia.
I guess I don't actually know what causes potholes, because when you have no cars on the road, do you get potholes?
I mean, I thought potholes are caused by cracking and freezing.
Yeah, expansion and contraction.
Then cars and trucks make it worse, but maybe you're right. Maybe
I don't know.
No, if you don't have semis driving down the road, they'd last a lot longer. Probably true. So, yeah, they're going to go right off to the Hilltop and see what happens. The other thing about this episode is because of all this crazy mano-a-mano shit that Rick and Negan eventually get up to, the pacing's all off. Because, I mean, I get it. You got Chekhov's bloody fucking hatchets and shit. But the build-up to that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And probably will go nowhere because at the end, Negan... Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
I think I know where you're going with that. It's Simon in control now, right? And
yeah.
Simon has no incentive to scare these people.
Simon doesn't give a shit about zombifying the Hilltop.
No.
So, anyway, Rick and Michonne make it back to the Hilltop as prophesied by last episode.
And here's where things really, the wheels fall off the episode for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Because you just see Judith and you just can't.
And she
disappears.
Every
time Judith's face is up there, it's TNT in your brain.
Well, it just demonstrates that this show is a series of unconnected scenes. When they want to go for a dramatic moment, they go for it. Continuity be damned. If you watch this series of scenes here, Rick is approached, he's given Judith, he's cradling her in his arms, and he walks off screen as Daryl looks at him.
Yeah.
Cut to Rick kneeling over the grave of Carl, Judith nowhere to be found, and Daryl continuing the scene as if nothing had ever happened. Where'd Judith go? What happened between the time that Daryl decided, I'm going to go after Rick, and the time he got to Rick?
Greg Nicotero.
There's just no concern for it.
Greg Nicotero doesn't. Yeah, he literally doesn't care.
Yeah.
And also, so Greg Nicotero, you know, we got problems with him, but this was written by two writers whose only previous writing experience.
Jesus, what?
One, the Patricia Arquette vehicle Medium.
Okay.
About
the ghost detective.
Yep. And the other was White Collar.
Oh, boy.
Which is a shitty drama that I think was on USA.
Sounds right.
I mean, it's not mentioned in the same breath as the rest of the Golden Era television.
Sure.
So I don't think any of these gentlemen are particularly engaged with like the finer points of storytelling.
Yeah.
Somehow Judith gets handed off, and Rick and Daryl have their first bromance moment since they last punched each other out last half season. Daryl kind of sort of apologizes or at least explains for acting unilaterally at the sanctuary, and Rick sort of accepts it, but there's no acknowledgement that had Daryl not done the things he did, Carl might still be alive and Alexandria might not be exploded. Like, there is no admission of guilt. There is, like Rick is acting as if that is there. There is this thing between them, but then no one talks about it. In fact, Rick says, no, you're right. Fuck this. I should have been like, fuck the Savers. I don't know. It's a very weird scene. Rick has decided Daryl's right not to worry about the innocent people at the Hilltop or at the Savior Complex, says he wants to get back in the fight and he'll be okay, and thanks him for delivering their people to safety. End scene. On the wall, Maggie worries if Rick can come back from this being the death of his son. Rosita.
Does anyone ever come back?
Yeah, does anyone ever come back?
Whatever she says.
Rosita opines that he'll keep going, and the real worry is what happens after. Then they do a little bit of other more low-key morgalizing, and oh, what a world we live in. And then Maggie notices some milk crates stacked up with what looks like a Mylar flag tied to them. And I'm thinking, how the fuck
did somebody get
in?
Did
Secretary of State Kathy Durant sneak up with her two goons and stack these crates up with the shiny Mylar flag inside of the gates of the hilltop? Uh-huh. Do they have lookouts or not? What the fuck? There's a million ways you could stage this. They could have put it at the crossroads outside the hilltop, so you'd actually have to drive out. Like, what is it? I mean, but they don't give a shit. It's like, oh, we need to introduce this concept. What's the most efficient? Maggie, just look out, and there it is. How to get there.
Ooh,
what?
There it is.
It's like, oh, God. I would like to know if there's anyone in the writing room even asking these questions, and they're actually saying, well, we don't care, or they're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
But whatever. Simon explores Dwight's loyalties while they're taking the road trip to the hilltop. He says he wants to get candid and get weird with him. Simon says they've thrown a lot at Team Rick and company. They keep on coming and they don't scare. And what does Dwight think about that? Dwight doesn't think much about it. That's Simon's opening argument, though.
Yeah, Dwight doesn't say a lot about what he thinks this episode. You're supposed to read it on his face.
Yeah. Well,
which is tough,
right? Because it's
half of it is useless.
It's like reading a book that's been in the fireplace for 30 minutes. Like,
right.
It might not be complete ash, but it's hard to make out some of the words. Maggie sees the note that said that was tied to the crates and says, "Fill these crates with food or records, phonograph records, and I'll give you the key to the future." They debate whether it's a savior trap or someone who wants to genuinely help them. Michonne wants to explore the option because she's the only fucking one that is actually properly motivated by Chandler Riggs, by Carl's death. And Maggie, Rosita, and Enid pledge to go with her after a brief debate, which doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, here's the thing. If you're serious about getting people to support you or be curious, why do you have this, what is just a ludicrous demand for records?
For records.
Like food or like, I'm gonna, like, it's just silly and absurd on the face of it, yeah?
I mean, it is. I guess it...
Why would any scavenger civilization have a stockpile of records?
Sure, that's fair.
If you want food, ask for food.
Yeah, I guess... If I'm being generous, I'm going to say it kind of hints at what they need more. Like, if they give over food, then they're flush with food.
Yeah.
And they probably would trade whatever they have for creature comforts or, you know, the records in this case. If they give you records like Maggie did, they probably need the food.
Yeah.
So that's what Kathy Durant's going to give them.
Yeah, it's just...
I'm being very, very generous, though.
By the way, if you don't recognize the reference, Kathy Durant was... The only thing I've seen
Georgie.
this actor be in before was House of Cards.
Yeah.
And that's who she played. I don't know. It's just so weird because you're right. It's like, we want medicine or silly string. Fill up the crates with medicine or silly string. Fill up the crates with bullets or whoopee cushions.
Uh-huh.
Like, what the fuck? Anyway, let's see what else. Rick is serving as a lookout for the hilltop. He sees the convoy coming looking for trouble. Then he sees Negan bringing up the rear all alone. Picks up the radio, thinks about radioing it in, decides fuck it, and takes after Negan. Simon sees him coming but ignores the threat as Rick deliberately ignores as Rick barrels down an alley and T-bones Negan, which the timing
is perfect. Good job, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's 100% blind on this shot.
Because here's the thing, like they're riding out in this open field when Nick sees when Rick sees them. The next shot they're going down like this really old city. It looks like Mogadishu from Black Hawk Down, where the streets are just wide enough for this convoy, and the alley that Rick's barreling down is just wide enough for his SUV, and they're all going about 50 miles an hour, and it's just, like, again, the timing is approximately, like, what it would take to launch a rocket from Earth and hit Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's incredible. It's incredible, Rick's timing. An honest-to-God car chase ensues. You know, Rick and Negan are like grimacing at the camera, and then there's wide shots of their action. Simon pulls over, tells everybody to stay frosty because he sees an opportunity here. He tells them to hold the position as he and Dwight go to investigate. We then.
Yeah, I mean.
Go ahead.
Rick has made the same mistake that Daryl made a few episodes ago, a half season ago. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
he's made this decision to try and end it quick.
Yeah.
He's come full Daryl on this, and now he's going to get a whole bunch of people potentially killed because Simon is going to take over in the end.
The thing is, I don't understand why he can't let Maggie know what's coming, because, like, I've seen Dukes of Hazzard. Mm-hmm. I've seen Deputy Enos get into hot pursuit, coo, 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 while he's on the radio back to base.
Right.
Like, you can do both things, man. You can be like T-boning Negan as you're relaying a warning to the Hilltop.
Actually, just doing live commentary of what he's doing would be great.
Right.
Oh, man, I see him on the road, Maggie.
I'm going after him. Oh, my God, I think I got a chance. Yeah, I'm going to take it. I don't know. I'm T-boning him. But here's the crazy thing. We leave them in mid-pursuit, and the next time we see Rick and Negan, they've crashed. Rick's thing smashed. Negan's on its side.
Yeah.
Might have been nice to show that.
Don't know how that happened.
Might have been nice to fucking show that. Like, what the fuck? It's the most exciting part, so let's not show it. Probably the most expensive, too.
Yeah.
Just saying. Rick gets out, gun blazing. He's got an AK-47 or something like that. He fires, like, 85 rounds at Negan, runs out of bullets, changes the clip as Negan runs into a building, fires maybe 10 shots, and just throws the AK down.
Maybe it wasn't a full clip that he was loading.
Yeah, right.
He had the low clip.
Yeah, he had the super barrel round, and then he just had the little mini 10 clip. He pulls out his Python and starts blasting. He quickly fires 6 shots, and he misses with everything. And then Negan runs upstairs, and he challenges Rick with Lucille. Rick, from downstairs, throws the hatchet at Negan. It hits over Negan's head, and then a second later, Negan dodges the shot that he's already missed.
Through the banister.
And he falls somehow, dodging to the side, falls through the handrail, just destroys it. And now he's got a cliffhanger situation.
Yeah. And then he falls 2 stories. Yeah, Rick takes a swing at his fingers.
Yeah, Rick goes up there with the hatchet, like, oh, I'm going to play this little piggy goes to town. And Negan says, fuck off, and drops, and he falls like 3 stories into the basement. Because
yeah, it's a Home Alone situation here.
Totally.
He drops what would probably break the legs of any normal human being.
Yeah.
Watch the damage that Negan should take during this episode, and watch the damage that he actually takes.
Yeah.
He's not a cat. He's a fucking tank, is what he is.
Right. It eventually catches up to him by the end of the episode, because then he blacks out, but we'll see.
That's true.
So yeah, that's. But the other thing is really staged weird. Now I was going to have a big long thing about he falls into a basement that's not really a basement. But I watched the episode, and there's weird little like alley that descends. So it is the basement, but there is one side that's kind of like dug out.
Okay.
Because that's the thing is like, wait, they're in the basement. How the fuck did they just smash out a window and jump outside? Like, but it checks out. It's the one fucking thing that checks out in this show. Which is all the more jarring. Maggie and company pull up to a lifted custom van with 2 Secret Service looking female agents. If Secret Service shopped exclusively at Urban Outfitters, a well-dressed and manicured woman identifies herself as Georgie. Her bodyguards are laughably disarmed.
Ugh.
Like
they're just laughable, period.
Yeah.
These characters are so fucking horrible.
Why?
Why so colorful? Because Walking Dead can't write a funny character that isn't ridiculous.
Yeah.
And what am I saying? They can't even write a funny character. None of these are funny.
Yeah, I don't get it. So she offers her knowledge that's only in her head for a few crates filled with food or records, but not spoken word records, because this is already not. It's like saying, or whoopee cushions, but not red whoopee cushions. I only accept blue. And then she says, you're going to have to trust me.
Which are by far the least common, I would say. The red ones are the most common whoopee cushions.
Right. I guess it would be like only accept red, not blue.
Yeah.
Anyway, she says, I know you're going to have to trust me. And trust sounds like a made-up word today, like flibberty shibberty. And then the other female Secret Service agent says, or clump. Or the other one says moisture. And this is what passes for comedy in this episode.
Yep.
Like, the people defending this Madam President-type figure are morons.
Yeah.
In boonie hats.
They are.
Enid steps forward and says, "Stop!" And this wasn't in the script. This is just Caitlin Nakin breaking character and saying, I can't take it anymore. I can't. This is just no. You're not allowed to say these lines." Maggie says, "I'm not giving you any deal. You're gonna have to come back to the Hilltop for further investigation because otherwise, the fucking episode would grind to a halt." Rick stalks.
I didn't choose his email this week, but Travis M had a couple of good descriptions about this scene. He described the van that they're in as the monster truck mystery machine,
yep.
Which is pretty good. And he described Georgie as Reba McEntire playing Colonel Sanders, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's really good. Rick stalks Negan through the basement while Negan fumbles in the dark for his beloved Lucille. They have a bunch of classic Negan-Rick dialogue. Rick wants to know, "Why won't you just let me save you, Rick?" And he offers him a one-time deal in loving memory of Carl, where if he gets to Hilltop Alexander in the Kingdom, the Fallen Line, he lowers the stake to 25%, and then Rick comes to work for him as a janitor. Negan's delusional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and Rick calls him on it, too. He's like, "Why would I trust you after what you did to Jadis's group?" This is the nugget of really good writing that I think could have been there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's intentional or what, but everybody having different pieces of this puzzle and Negan figuring out here in real time during conversation with someone else that Simon fucked him is good writing.
Yes.
That's actually really strong writing, especially when we, the audience, know that we can see all the pieces moving here.
Yeah.
The gears moving. And that they did this in this episode, I can't chalk up to actually good writing. It has to be an accident.
It's like the Chipotle burrito that gives you botulism. Like, the corn salsa was probably fine. You know? It's all wrapped up in rancid meat and rice has been left out for 48 hours and sour cream that was accidentally left in the sun for a day. But the corn salsa is fine.
But I can't applaud the guy who made the corn salsa because everybody else fucked up along the way.
But also, it's not like the corn salsa was like planned to be fine. They just got it out of the fridge and just happened to run out of shitty. So like, it's an accident that the corn salsa was good.
Exactly.
You're still going to shit for 5 days and might have to go to hospital and die. But it's not going to be the corn salt that did it to you.
Yeah.
Then Rick finds Lucille, and we know it's going to be on. Simon asks Dwight as they're approaching the crash location if he's ever thought of clipping Negan. And Dwight says, "Nah, when he took my wife and then ironed my face, never occurred to me to fuck him over." And Simon says, "But you didn't because you're a survivor." And he asks if backing Negan is the best play to continue being a survivor, and Dwight says he just wants to move on. They find Negan's car, and there's blood splattered everywhere because, again, he had a 5-gallon fucking bucket full of zombie guts riding shotgun with him.
Yeah, and Simon is not wrong on any of this.
No.
Can
Simon,
I just say I'm on Team Simon here?
I am on Team Simon above everyone.
Yeah, right. Like, I want him to go to the Hilltop. I want the massacre.
I do.
And this will just be the Simon show.
I do. I want Simon to take over and restore sanity in this world.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Team Simon all the way. Simon says, "Hey, let's just walk away and start a new chapter here." Dwight pulls out his Sherry Memorial cigarette pack, lights one last sad half-burnt cigarette, takes a long drag, flicks it to Negan's car, which has been leaking gas this whole time, and it just explodes into flame. Simon, who is fluent in speaking explosion, says, "Good answer."
Mm-hmm. And I think throughout this episode, Dwight is thinking that Simon wants to take this in a different direction, but not the direction he takes it ultimately, right?
Like,
I don't think Dwight understands what Simon is getting at quite. Like, he says, let's move on from what Negan had, but I think Dwight thinks that it's going to be kinder and gentler, whereas Simon is taking it the full opposite direction.
Right.
And it's on his face at the end when Simon, you know, rallies the troops and says, we're going to go kill everybody.
Right.
Dwight realizes, oh, I've misjudged that.
Right. Oh, see, the whole time I thought that Simon was trying to, like, get away from, like, Dwight was trying to get away from Negan and Simon, and what I continually wondered when he was walking and Simon's trying to gain his trust and has guard completely down, why the fuck doesn't Dwight just kill him and run off?
Yeah.
You know, like, optionally, part A of that plan is to go find Rick and team up with him, hunt down Negan, kill him, and go back to the Hilltop as a hero.
Yeah.
With your trust, you know, I don't know. Like,
I think it's because Dwight doesn't fully realize what Simon wants to do here. He just hears about how he doesn't agree with Negan. And Simon's hoping, or Dwight is hoping, that will go down a different road where they can all get along.
And the other thing is, the Saviors seem oddly compliant. Like if they're all Negan, then how does that hierarchy work? Because Negan is like, he's like the Rickest Rick. He's the Neganest Negan, sure.
Right.
But like, I would think that in any kind of even temporary power vacuum, there would be some intense jockeying for who is the right, who is the now the Neganest Negan there is.
Yeah.
But there isn't. There isn't. They're just like, okay, I guess Simon and Dwight are fucking in charge, so whatever. We'll stay here and be errand boys and girls. Maggie, back at the Hilltop, says she just wants to take their stuff, and Enid agrees because they're fucking pathetic, and she's right. How? What if these assholes had gone to the garbage people? They'd be dead. They'd have been thrown into the Thunderdome with fucking the latest spiked, dreaded out zombie, and they'd be dead. They'd gone to the Saviors, they'd be dead. If they went to the Hilltop or Alexandria or the Kingdom, they might not be dead. But they are completely pathetic. It's amazing. I she talks about how much she's wandered later in the episode and how many people she's contacted. I am fully skeptical that this has ever happened.
Yeah, it makes me assume there is some special knowledge. Well, the episode all but says it, that Georgie knows a lot about the community that she's dealing with, and I don't understand how that's possible.
I know.
The only thing is, so when I saw the name of this episode and I thought, what could that mean? the only key that I can think of is the key card, the PPP card that Heath had when he left. And so I'm thinking maybe it's possibly Heath who's informing them about what kind of community they got. But there's no fucking way. This show has forgotten about Heath entirely.
I don't think they have.
They fucking have. He's not coming back ever.
Yeah. Because that's really the only thing that makes sense.
Because I don't know what kind of spy network she has.
Right.
I mean, she has a lot of info.
I just thought it would be like, I don't know. I keep like backseat writing the show. Like, Georgie should have shown up there with their thing, and then Maggie should have tried to get the drop on it, and then Georgie reveals that there's like sniper teams in the hills all around, and it's a stalemate. Because Georgie's like, well, I can kill you, and Maggie's like, but then my people will find you and eliminate you, and then they're at an impasse. Well, let's hear us out then. But like, Georgie is just pathetic. She's a lamb to the slaughter.
Yeah.
And I don't, again, nobody, I guess, asks these questions or thinks about these things in a writing room, and it's really frustrating. Shall we move on? Yes. Michonne says that Carl trusted someone, and look, we got a doctor and a friend now. And then she tells Enid to step off because Enid got up in her personal space. Enid's very breathy in this scene. I don't know if this has been something Caitlin does all the time, but it just... At the end of every sentence, she's flouncing off. She's just... Maggie says, look, Michonne, things don't just work out. And Michonne says, you're right. They don't. We got to try real hard, and we can't give up on who Carl wanted us to be. Michonne literally... Carl's stepmom, the only one repping Carl's memory in any kind of productive way.
She's come in 3 seasons worth of trying to describe what they're actually looking for as an end goal for this show. She's come the closest in this scene, but still something isn't right there. Like, she just says there has to be something after, and you get a nebulous sense of what she's trying to say, and she comes very close to actually saying something meaningful, but then she doesn't.
Yeah.
Because no one ever does on this show.
Yeah, and it's also weird to be talking about what comes after while you're still in a fight for your life.
Yeah.
Like, win the war and then decide. Although, I guess in this kind of, like, with that absent Geneva Convention, winning the war probably implies just completely wiping out the other tribe. Although, I don't know, like, is there precedent for that in human history? Like, even Genghis Khan, like, would let you surrender.
Yeah. Yeah.
He might exact a huge toll on you, or he might kill like every man in your village to keep you from rising up over him. But like, the idea that you're just going to just kill everybody to kill them, men, women, and children, not a lot of precedent, I don't think. So Negan continues to taunt Rick throughout the basement. Rick then says, I'm going to light your baseball bat on fire, and proceeds to do that. And it's kind of awesome, honestly.
It is, yeah.
And I'm like, this kind of is cool. This might be cool. But then Negan tackles, he's infuriated, he tackles Rick through a door that's marked Eaters, which, Jesus Christ, what's with all the stupid names for zombies, man? This is might be the dumbest one.
I don't know. That goes back way back into
Walking Dead. They're the Eaters. They're the Eaters, which is full of what turns out to be incredibly flammable zombies. These things are made out of wicker, furniture, and kerosene because the merest touch of that flaming Lucille, and they just go up like Roman candles. Rick and Negan fight forever. They just take turns, like, clumsily dodging flaming Lucilles and tackling each other. They can't land any real licks on
Rick,
each other.
Rick does, though. Here's another instance of Negan being fucking bulletproof, built like a tank.
He does get
a full-on shot to the arm
from Lucille.
And has no repercussions whatsoever.
He is wearing a leather jacket, but on the other
but
hand...
But it's a baseball bat. And he has bones, right? Human bones in his body.
It's on fire and wrapped with barbed wire.
It is, and so, covered in guts.
Well, so, I feel I like know. The fire probably...
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, cleansed all.
Guts not
but,
a problem, but the bones, the bone breaks.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe it's because, like, all of my leather biker jackets have built-in armor.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I think I could take a baseball swing with one of my jackets on.
I
wouldn't want to, but no. I would say I'd lay good odds on my bones not breaking, but I don't know. But also, Negan doesn't look like he's wearing that kind.
It's more of a leather jacket.
It's more like a show jacket rather than anything that's offering useful protection. Negan manages to then jump out a window and escape after he reclaims Lucille. Does he reclaim Lucille? He does.
He does.
Okay. And it's like, that's the thing. It's like, I wonder if there's going to be some kind of like bullshit psychological damage here because throughout this episode, he's just like saying how beautiful Lucille is. And now Lucille's essentially been Dwightified.
Yeah.
You know, is that going to make her even more beautiful than Negan or is it going to cause him to look astray? He's going to, you know, see a hot looking hockey stick and leave her high and dry. So Maggie offers one crate of records and Georgie says she'll accept it, and give her several crates of food in return as a down payment on the future because she's giving them the key to the future, which turns out to be a handmade binder full of plans for windmills, silos, grain refineries, aqueducts, and says that she's going to be able to make so much shit from this that next time she returns, she'll be repaid. And Maggie seems to be impressed by information that can be found at any public library, which there are hundreds and hundreds of books that are and libraries that are not being used for anything but Abraham and Rosita bone sessions in the apocalypse, apparently. I don't know.
I like the idea of a woman who undoubtedly is hoarding all of the solar panels and computer systems for herself.
Right.
And is going around handing out medieval technology manuals.
Right.
Because we can do better than this. We really can. We have a lot of solar panels that are already built.
That's true.
Already available.
That's true.
Good to go.
On the other hand, with humanity being so small at this point, I think that you could probably go back to this kind of technology and save those for maybe other purposes. But you're right. Yeah, like, isn't... I mean, I don't know. Maybe you do need a windmill to grind flour up, but...
Or just motorized, like an engine, a motor of some kind, you know?
Right.
Powered by the sun.
Right. Because it's going to be, I don't know if we talked about this for a while, but I was reading something that a scientist said a couple of years back where, like, if we ever do have some kind of apocalyptic event, like, say, an asteroid hits and it wipes out 99% of civilization and the technology is destroyed, it's going to be very hard to restart the Industrial Revolution because most of the natural resources that are still in the planet, you need very high technology to reclaim because all the shit where you just stick a hole in the ground and up come the ground comes a bubbling crude, like Beverly Hillbilly style, we've sucked up. All the easy to get to coal and natural, like you have to like really have some heavy industry. So it's like one of these chicken and eggs situations where, you know, unless there's enough seed left that you can get back there very quickly, you might never get back because that shit replenishes in geologic time.
Yeah, I feel him on that, but I think like that would be true if we didn't understand that there's a relentless energy source out there in the form of solar and wind and hydropower.
Like, well, and you're right. If you only had to support 1% of the human population, you could probably get all your needs from that. But what happens, like, I mean, that's the thing.
We
though.
Would just
what,
build
what
a
happens,
different type of industrial revolution, I think.
What happens when, because solar cells are not made out of like fucking Minecraft shit. You can't just punch trees and make a solar panel. Like, you need rare earth materials.
You need some kind of recycling program, which I don't know what it what it would take to do that. To recycle all the shit we've already mined.
Yeah.
That's readily available in Jadis's backyard.
I mean, my position is we play it safe and we try not to get in any situation that would might even come close to causing an apocalypse because, yeah,
that's
maybe we play
good.
Our cards right.
Yeah.
We can bounce back from this, but, you know, Jesus, people, let's not gamble. So, yeah, that's that scene. Enid then is confused on the hilltop walls with Maggie it's actually Michonne. About how random and arbitrary life is, because she blows away what's-her-face's grandma, and she lives, and Carl spares the dude, and he's dead, and what are we supposed to do? Not fight? And Michonne says, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is with all this black and white thinking? We kick the savior's ass in, but then there will be something after where we have to try to make a peace.
Yeah.
And, like, Jesus, like, that's not a fucking really hard concept to understand, but it's taken a season and a half to develop the theme. Mm-hmm. Simon and Dwight come back to the Saviors and pronounce Negan gone. Simon then gives a rousing speech about how they're going to go to the hilltop and wipe them out in Negan's memory, and they're all fucking really jonesed about it. Negan, who, after escaping and completely befuddling Rick as to where he's gone, must have just passed out. Like, all this injuries he sustained just overwhelmed him.
Come back on him, yeah.
And somehow Jadis found him and has strapped him into the passenger seat of his car. She's driving down with the gun held on, and he comes to and says, well, shit. And then she knocks him out cold.
And this is why I don't believe that any of that intricate puzzle pieces coming together
is going
was
to matter.
Was intentional.
Or was even intentional.
Because what the fuck? They're just going to say, we don't care how Jadis got here. We don't care where she came from or how she spotted Negan.
Right.
Even what side of the fucking building he'd come out on.
Yeah.
How would she know that? But
right.
here it is. We're just going to throw her right in the middle and say she caught him.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Yeah. Like Negan wrecked.
Fucking,
Negan wrecked. Jadis found him.
Brain dead writing.
Yeah. If it's hard to figure out something, just yada yada through it. Not even yada yada. Just cut to it. Cut to the thing you want to happen. Fuck transitions.
Yeah.
Which I don't know, might be a perfectly fine way to defensively write the show, because if the odds are, if they tried to show the transition, it would be fucked up beyond all belief. So why even try? Why even try? So that's the episode.
I am encouraged, though, that the ratings arc is just like this true bell curve here. It's like, it goes up in the middle, it goes down at the end, and way down.
Yeah, and then I noticed that there was, like, people were saying, oh, you know, the ratings for this first episode of this season were, like, back more towards the high end of the last season average, but the next few episodes crashed back to, they've lost, what, another 30 or 40% from the season before?
Yeah, I mean, season 8 premiere, not the mid-season premiere, but the very beginning of it, was 11.5 million.
Right.
We're at 6.5 million now. So
right.
You lost another 50% of your audience. Congratulations.
Right, from the high of like 18.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's trash. They're not even trying. I don't know what they're doing with this show, but they might not be doing anything with it. They might just be riding it into the ground and then hoping that they can ride the back of Fear the Walking Dead, which maybe, from what I hear, they're putting a little more effort into as far as writing goes.
It's a better show. There's a debate on our forums this week.
I haven't seen it, so I can't really talk about it.
Since
but
the first half season, which was god-awful.
Yeah.
But I heard season 3 is better, and season 4 looks like it's continuing that trend. But there's a debate on that on our forums, forums.baldmove.com, and it seems like, yeah, it's better, but like only in comparison to The Walking Dead. Like if you compare it to almost any other like top 10, top 20 show, it's still got pretty massive problems.
Oh, yeah.
So, which again, it's a shame because I maintain there's nothing that says you can't make a very good zombie apocalypse television show that's gripping and has real human drama and is interesting and complex plots and interesting characters. No one apparently has an interest in doing that.
Sure.
It's either schlock or schlock masquerading as a prestige serious drama. But yeah, that's the episode, man. Hey, I want to tell everybody about the club before we get the feedback. If you like our podcast, and honestly, I don't know why you do. this is a terrible show and not a great podcast about it. But we actually do a lot of other good work. So maybe this will just be the ad to be like, if you like what we do at Bald Move, you can support us by joining the club. And it's not just altruism. No, you get stuff in return. You get ad free feeds and VIP access to our forums and first run Bald Movie complete spoiler reviews and extra bonus audio and video content such as our video game playthroughs. This is not like Twitch. This is something we just do privately. We have a lot of fun doing. We play like adventure Telltale style games. Right now we're playing a Square Enix follow-up to Life is Strange, the prequel to Life is Strange Before the Storm. We had a lot of fun last month with the first episode. We'll be playing the second episode and releasing that this Wednesday, and it's exclusive to club members. If you would like to get any of that content or any of our other exclusive content for subscribers only, go to club.baldmove.com and sign up. We appreciate your support, and I think you'll enjoy extra content. Do you have the feedback of the week, which you can send in at watchingdead@baldmove.com?
I do. Sean from Houston has a quick question, and okay. this is kind of more of a meta thing about our show, but I wanted to talk about it. He says, I already expected to hear you guys complain about each episode. You already know and expect how the show is written, so why do you review it like you expected it to be very good? Why not just enjoy the show as a poorly written show now?
Isn't that what's how is that different from what we're actually doing?
Because I don't enjoy poorly written shows. Yeah. I enjoy ridiculous shows that are well written and know what they are. I don't enjoy shows that are just plain badly written. And if I were not doing podcasts on them for 8 years running now, I probably wouldn't do a podcast on a show that is this poorly written.
Yeah, and the other thing is like I thought the second episode, still not good, but it was entertaining. And right. I guess if they could deliver that every week, this would be a very different podcast. And I'd be a lot less angry, and it'd be a lot more just like ridiculous and jokey. And I mean, I'm going to say, like, I think we still, like, I mean, I just, it,
I can't
to
think
me,
of a show that's poorly written that I enjoy.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist. Like,
yeah. Like, there's
I mean,
dumb
Z Nation
stuff.
Is not a poorly written show.
Right.
Z Nation is a well-written show that is completely over-the-top ridiculous and knows that it is.
Right. I'm trying to think of,
like... I don't know. I just don't enjoy those shows.
You know, like, True Blood is a pretty guilty pleasure of mine.
Is it a poorly written show?
In later seasons, sure.
Yeah? Okay.
But there was still... But they still, like, knew what you wanted... In from the show and gave you plenty of that too.
Yeah.
So it was very like poorly written, but also very campy and very fun, for the most part. So like that's the thing. Like I mean, what would a show where we just expect it to be terrible and then enjoy it looks like? You know, it's like I just bit into this burrito, and every bit but the corn salsa is rancid. Even if I know that.
Oh, I'm enjoying it so much.
I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah. Like, now that I know it's going to give me fucking bloody diarrhea, I can really appreciate the flavors of rancidness and disgustingness that's happening. But, yeah, I don't know if it works like that. And I don't even know what that show would look like. What would that podcast... I mean,
look at the way we covered 24. Right?
Yeah.
That show is ridiculous.
Right.
And we covered it as such.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead does not know that it is ridiculous.
Right.
Is the problem.
Right.
And so we treat it as if, I guess we treat it the way that the writers want us to treat it, which is seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't work out for The Walking Dead, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but
it's like, imagine if like Bozo the Clown came up for your child's birthday and said, "Hey, I just want to talk. I want to talk about a serious subject."
Oh shit!
I want to talk about.
Still got the nose on and the shoes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to talk about. I don't know, the Holocaust.
Oh fuck!
And you're like, okay, fine. Let's see what Bozo the Clown has to say about the Holocaust. And he opens his mouth and he's a Holocaust denier.
Okay.
You know, what are you going to put on Yelp? Well, he said he's going to talk about the Holocaust. So I guess this, I mean, come on, man. Like, like I said, I'm trying to think of what a show would look like where we just like, yeah, we know it's going to be terrible and we enjoy it as such. You have to like stuff that's so bad, it's good. Has a little charm to it, man.
Yeah, but only if the person in charge of it knows that, I guess. Or
there is unintentional comedy, like The Room, for example.
There is, but
right?
I feel like that isn't sustainable.
Yeah,
like you couldn't make a series out of The Room that every week was a shit show,
right?
And people watched in huge numbers because they just go, "Oh, this is terrible."
Right, right.
This is terrible, and it was funny the first 2 weeks, but
right.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some people would really dig The Room, the TV series.
But that's the thing is, like, The Room, if Tommy Wiseau was not in The Room, it was just some random, terrible soap opera star,
mm-hmm.
It would not be a cult classic because he kind of makes it. Like, he right. is terrible, but also kind of awesome and completely unaware of both of those qualities. And that's why it works.
But yet he's delivering the thing that you want. And that's what The Walking Dead doesn't do, right?
Right.
It has not been delivering on its promise for right. years now.
Right. And like I said, I feel like we, you know, like Greg Nicotero is the type of guy who wears John Lennon glasses and a beret. Like he carries himself with the swagger of like a French auteur.
Okay. Yeah.
But he directs this. And he's like also very aware of it. I mean, it's like it's I don't know. It's very hard to it's very hard to find the sweet spot with this show. I don't know. I felt like we were doing. I don't know. I felt like we were doing a good job for what it was. But
we're trying. We're trying our best to guide them in the right direction.
Yeah.
Here we're,
and that's the thing.
We're not only telling them where they've gone astray, but what they could do to fix it.
And that's what's so
and
irritating because we've been taking shit. We've been taking shit for people for a long time, but we were the canary in the coal mine.
Yes.
Back when the only thing that was wrong with the show was the corn salsa, we were saying, this corn salsa tastes off. And people are like, shut up. Why you got to nitpick it? Why can't you just enjoy it? And now when the show's just
at the end of the day, like after their corn salsa burrito, they'd be a little bit tired, right?
Right.
They need to go to bed early.
Right, right.
They'd feel just not right.
Right. Right. But like in you know my mind if like the show had taken any of this criticism as the like the professional critics would say this stuff and we were saying this stuff and then slowly all the professional critics just stopped covering this ridiculous show if at any time they had you know taken that to heart but not you know they've been enabled by their audience and I don't know how many millions of people will continue to watch this show
6.6
right I don't think the show's found its floor
no
because like I imagine there's a lot of fans that are like, oh, man, I kind of want to see what happens post all-out war. And, like, the garbage people are dumb, but maybe that's just the – but now this Georgie person shows up, and it looks like to be kind of garbage person 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a completely weird scenario, like this weird kind of presidential figure stepping out of her fucking – you know, post-apocalyptic motorcade and instantly take – I mean, it's just – no, it's not as bad as the garbage people, but it kind of is because none of this stuff makes sense. Like, she's got bodyguards who can't guard her body. And she's asking for fucking bullets and whoopee cushions. It's fundamentally ridiculous. And yet all the characters take it seriously. Like, there's not even one person this episode said, what the fuck is with the records?
Yeah.
Do they have...
They did that even with the garbage people, they did that.
Yeah, like even Rick and Michonne, like, are these people for real? You know, but no one, like, it was all about how these are people who are not fit for survival, not that it's ludicrous. Like, what is this woman dressed like the architect from The Matrix with, I don't know, like the two Australian weirdos from Ace Ventura 2 backing her up? Like, what is going on? Like... I mean, honestly, what I want to see when Enid and Mags and Michonne and Rosita got to the hilltop is like 2 minutes of them just kind of going around tag teaming on how silly this was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like that would have been the show just needs to be a little bit more self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to put this out, like, lean into it. But that makes me think that the show itself does not know how stupid this is. And yeah. That's the infuriating part.
Yes.
I'd love to be able to wink with them, but they're just staring me down. They give me the creepy stare down, and it's making me feel uncomfortable. All right. Watching Dead at baldmove.com if you have further suggestions on how to cover the show. Is that all? Is that all we got? Are we out of here?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, you know the routine. We'll be back this weekend for another live watch where we, in real time, break down the ridiculousness, and we'll be back for another podcast next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.